Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and as always, I am here joined by...
Kayla.
How are you today? How are you doing? How is it going?
I'm a little tired. Yeah, that's about as far as my brain can think right now.
Well, hopefully we don't talk about anything boring today, because then you'll be going right to sleep. Now, that would make for not good content. Yeah, I'm kind of tired too. You know, we always record at night because that's usually when we're actually better than the morning, because that tells you something about how we work, how it works over here. But this is going to be a more of a chill episode, you know, so even if people are tired, you know, this might relax them a little bit. Talking about just some music. We're not talking about movies really today. Well, we are, but we're also just talking about music. Before that, we have to get to some of these answers to the questions of the week. I never say that right. The answers to the question of the week. That it's just hard to say. It's a hard thing to figure out how to say that. But this was a pretty open-ended question, so I wasn't sure what kind of answers we were going to get, but we got a wide variety of answers from people. Some very specific, some not as specific. What was the question?
So the question was to pitch us a Marvel spin-off Disney Plus series.
Right, which isn't really a question, but it's kind of.
It's a prompt.
yes, an essay prompt, if you will.
So we gave a couple like webisode mini series.
Which were all great.
Amazing. I think the Witch streaming was a mega W. But we've got some good ones here. Maybe we can kind of like spice up some of the more like simple ones.
Yeah. So which one should we get to first here?
We can read Waffles.
All right. This is one that we might need to brainstorm a little bit, because she gave us a prompt in the response to our prompt, which in a class would probably get not an A, but in here it's fine. So what is the prompt that she gave us?
So she said, it's Shang-Chi and he punches a god. Yeah, IDK, how to pitch a movie, LOL, but let's say Shang-Chi punch a god.
Well, that could happen. Maybe he has a disagreement with Thor.
What if, here's a good one. What if each episode is a different type of like god or other hero? And they're doing some mundane, I don't know, eating food, touring San Francisco. And then at some point in the show episode, Shang-Chi always punches the person that he's with. So maybe he's like touring. Maybe isn't that where he's from? San Francisco?
I believe so.
Yeah, we could do San Francisco with Shang-Chi. And then each webisode will be him showing a different hero around the city.
Yes, because most of it, they're used to New York, so this is like a new environment.
Yeah, and then at the end of each like 6-7 minute episode of them visiting one of the things, he just happens to like punch them for some reason, just as like a little bit.
One of those episodes it would be Thor, and then he punches Thor.
Yeah, I could see him being like showing Thor the like bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, and then Thor being like, punch me off the bridge, and then he like punches him, and then he like flies off the side of the bridge or something.
Yeah, sure.
That's how I envision it in my brain, like just kind of like bit comedy, slapstick comedy.
We're a big fan of the 7-8 minute episodes, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go with these.
There's some of these that will not work with that, because some people did take it like just like the more
standard, which is fine.
Which is just, we're just different, you know. We try to think about out of the box a little bit. Mm-hmm. So one thing was a little bit interesting that Dan brought up was a Yelena spy thriller series about her being an assassin with morals. This is Dan from the Film is Lit pod, which we did an episode with them. So this is pretty interesting. I think she's a great character. And she was like the best part, I think, of both Black Widow and also the Hawkeye episode she was in. So I would love to see her in a like her own series. And I think a lot of people like her too. So
yeah, and he also said give Florence Pugh anything she wants. I think we agree.
In general, not even talking about a show. I think just overall just in life.
Anything.
What else do we have here? So this is more in line with we had the spoilers, but there was some cameos, you know, in Doctor Strange 2. And I think maybe this got Zach Smith Michaels thinking with his idea, which is that Quicksilver and Nightcrawler go on a summer tour to recruit mutants for Xavier's school. Summer tour sounds like a fun. It could be
that
called summer
fun.
Tour.
And then you kind of get a good, because one of my favorite things about the X-Men universe, I love the X-Men universe, is like how different things are, but how normal the people are. And so like, they can kind of be doing this and go to someone's house and then they see some kid doing some really crazy shit. And then the next episode, I think this would also serve good short, like maybe 10-minute episodes. We get introduced to each of these kids and then maybe like that kicks off a new series with the characters we're introduced to. The real question is, who will be playing Quicksilver? Because there's two different actors that have played Pietro before, right?
Or do you think that they will just recast?
So do we recast, or do we use one of the previous actors?
I don't know. I also think a lot of these that we're talking about, because they use a lot of famous actors. One maybe we can talk about next that uses a lot of the more famous actor characters. I think some of these... people need to be more open maybe to the idea that maybe some of these should just be animated, you know, because people are really good at finding like doubles for voices that are like, just do the trick. And if some of these like are going to be impossible to ever get because of just like the amount of money they would cost. But why we can just do some of these animated, you know, I think that What If maybe didn't get a lot of press, but I thought like that was a cool way to get a lot of characters involved. Some of people did revoice their parts in those, but they don't have to, you know. So let's go to this next one, which has a lot, like I said, a lot of characters, which I think if they were going to do this, it would need to be animated, because there's no way they could get all these people, even though it's Disney. I still don't think that they could get everyone to do it. So what is this this one we have here?
So this is from a different Dan.
Wow, it's almost like people can have more than one, like more than one person can have the same name.
Wow, who would have thought? So this one's called Secret Chores, with Nick Fury, still off-world, Skrull agents Talos and Sorin are tasked with using their shape-shifting powers to go undercover and ascertain valuable intel.
So this is, a lot of people I feel like are pitching ones where it's like not a chronological order, you know, where it's like all the episodes are more self-contained, but there's an overarching theme to the series, which I think is a great idea, because not everything needs to be like a mini series, like a movie, because that's what they've been doing. But I like some of these where it's like, they're just like concepts and each episode is like self-contained within its own idea. So he did come up with all six episodes. We won't read all six because we don't have a lot, like an hour, but I think there are a couple here that might like help demonstrate what the idea of this show is. So this first episode, I'll just start at episode one, would be called Massively Inconvenient Portals. And so you would have Darcy Lewis and Agent Jimmy Woo, which that'd be great no matter what that is going to happen in the episode. Accompanied by Eric Selvig, I think that's how you say his name. And then so Talos and Sorin, they travel to MIT to investigate a series of portals appearing around campus, and it's eventually revealed that they're accidentally being created by Ned. And maybe that ties in with the Ned miniseries that we came up with, where it's like after he learns about magic, he has to learn how to use it then, you know?
I think we also need a Jimmy Woo magic show, but like him doing like magic tricks. But
just
not
the
like
magic
with
tricks.
Magic, yeah. Like Jimmy Woo teaches magic.
I think that'd be great. Remember, because I feel like Disney Plus was trying to do more of that when they launched, like educational videos or like cooking videos. So maybe you could get, I think those would be more successful if they did actually like incorporate some of their characters rather than them just like being like Food Network shows. Because, you know, they had like a cooking craft shows, but they didn't have like any Disney people involved. But if they had maybe like a Marvel character doing an educational kind of like magic, look at all this, learn these tricks for your family. Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
And I like Jimmy Woo.
I agree.
Let's get a couple more here. Just quick rapid fire. Your favorite superhero, Ant-Man. There's a Chenzi gave us an idea for a prequel series on Antony the Ant from Ant-Man 1.
That is a great idea. I read that and I was like, that is one that I am totally on board with.
Yeah, and that's something like people maybe wouldn't expect as much either, where it's not just like a character that they're trying to introduce or a character we already know. It's like a smaller character from the past.
Like, I could see that being like a special, like a 25-minute like short kind of thing, or maybe like 20-minute, like just kind of a short film, but like a little special.
A little special.
Also, speaking of Ant-Man.
Yes.
Bryce said shorts of Louise recapping every MCU project.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think that could definitely happen.
Yeah, I think that falls in line with like the webisode type, like them just sitting down in front of the camera.
Right. And they're also running into the issue. They have like over 30 things that you technically need to see if you want to understand everything. So not everyone has time for 30 things, but there's a lot of videos on YouTube that get tons of views of like recapping phase 4 of the MCU, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I could see it. But they could get in on
that. People want that.
An icon in Disney Plus where it's like catch up on the MCU and you click on it and then you have 3 to 4 minute videos on like, you know, here's information on the multiverse, here's information on whatever, and it's just him explaining it.
And like depending on which movie is coming up, they can like make playlists for like these are the must see things to catch up on before you go see the next movie. Like that would definitely work. And he's such a great like personality, like he could definitely do it just by himself, like bouncing off the camera.
Jordan said, this one's good, the bird from Iron Man 2, that's all he said, so I think we should run with this one. So, if you remember in Iron Man 2, this is the bird that the villain guy has.
I don't remember this at all, I'm not gonna lie, I'm in the dark. I don't remember Iron Man 2 at all.
Yeah, it's that guy's with a, like, Mickey Rourke, it's his bird.
Okay.
And it was
like
his,
a parrot. Like it just talks.
Yeah,
back
it's like
to
a
him,
cockatoo. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And so, it was his bird in real life.
Oh. Okay.
I think.
So would this show be about maybe the bird recaps every Marvel movie?
No, I think what we should do is I think it should be like a behind the scenes of a Marvel movie, but like through the perspective of the bird actor. Not like the bird in the show.
It would be like a POV, like first person kind of thing.
Yeah, Sonny the Cockatoo. So it would be about Sonny the Cockatoo portraying Irina, the bird in the movie.
Sonny's behind the scene tour. Yeah, that'd be fun. And there's not like enough behind the scenes stuff, I don't think, that they do. So that would be a cool way to like maybe incorporate some of that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Hunter did give us one, but it kind of spoils Doctor Strange 2. So if you haven't seen Doctor Strange 2, just like press like the 30-second button like twice and then you'll be safe. So this one, he says, I want a spinoff show of the Illuminati before they all brutally die. Which, I mean, maybe. I really don't think that John Krasinski is a good casting choice for that. So I don't know if I really want to see him. Maybe he's like on vacation during the show.
He's literally not. He's like one of the worst casting choices ever.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think that regardless, they will be introduced maybe just with other actors, obviously, in the future. Because they're obviously going to want to incorporate that in shows and TV shows in the future. So I'm sure we'll see something with them, if maybe just not with those actors. Wow. Lots of things to think about. I think if Marvel listens to the last like 12 minutes of this podcast, they might have the whole next phase just ready for them.
Yeah.
I think we just laid it out for them.
And we'll never get compensation for it because they don't pay people. So
they don't even pay the comic book
creators. Yeah, that's what I was like referencing.
I love to see creators not recognized for their work.
And that's making really cool. Making Disney billions of dollars.
It's a really cool trend that they're doing right over there.
Hmm.
Ryle, thank you all for writing in and giving us your very imaginative ideas. And we'll have another question at the end of this episode for you all to answer. So let's jump into the reason everyone clicked on this episode, which is film scores. No, we're not talking about ratings like a score. We're talking about a score like music.
Wow, wowee. Man, I guess I'm going to have to, change my notes, change my rankings. I thought we were scoring things here.
No, we've been wanting to do this episode, I feel like, for a while.
I think like 2.5 years or more. Like,
yeah, it just feels like so daunting. It's such a big, broad thing.
Yeah.
It'd be like doing an episode on cinematography, you know?
Sure.
It's like, how do you do that? But I think we found a way to maybe categorize stuff and just like give you our thoughts on different things and not hopefully not go too off the rails with everything, because it's one of those things where you can go pretty off the rails, I think. So what our kind of idea is, first we're just gonna just start talk we're gonna talk a little bit first about just general feelings on film scores. What do we like about film scores? What are maybe some film scores that we've like got us into, maybe helped us get into movies more, you know, because I think that can happen when you're a kid. Certain movies that you like, you notice when you first notice scores in them. So what is things that you like in your film scores? Do you even like film scores? Maybe you hate them.
Oh my gosh, I hate film scores. I cannot believe that I was dragged into doing this episode. No, I love film scores. I have been listening to them since like 8th or 9th grade, I think, when I first started getting into them. And then I listen to film scores a lot, so much so that two of my top artists of my top five on Spotify Wrapped last year were composers, and it was almost 3 out of my 5. So
wow, so close to the big three.
I know. I love film scores. I listen to them a lot when I'm like working or getting things done, nice background music. And then I also like buying like vinyls of film scores. I have like 3 that I've pre-ordered that have not come yet, but I'm hoping that they come soon. No, 4, because I just pre-ordered another one. But
yeah, I would agree. I think they're definitely, like you said, good for studying and stuff like that. Like, they can serve multiple purposes, which is nice. So they're good for that, like more passive listening. But they also can have a lot of intricacies. And I think one thing that I like is, obviously, maybe if I'm seeing a movie in theaters, I'm not going to, and I really like that movie, I maybe am not going to go rush back to see it right away, because like I have things going on in my life that I just can't see movies in theaters like every day. But I think it's a cool way to like revisit a movie like audibly, if that makes sense. Or like if just get into the headspace of the movie by listening to the score. Sometimes I do that if I'm like wanting to think about the movie more, and I put on the score and it can kind of like bring up some of those emotions or remind you of certain scenes. And it's interesting because it's one of the only ways with like an art form that you can experience like just a single element, because obviously movies are made up of like a ton of different elements that like go into that. Like you said, we have the cinematography, you have sound, you have lighting, you have so many different things that are happening that are like being condensed in this one thing. But there's not many art forms where it's like I'm taking a part out of the whole and just trying to digest this one aspect. So I think like the idea of just listening to film scores on their own is really interesting. And you can create a lot of different experience, and maybe even like you have a relationship with the score outside of the movie, and then you watch the movie and it's like you're bringing something into it because you know where you were when you were listening to the score, if that makes sense. I don't know. It can change your relationship with the movie for sure. There's some that we'll talk about later that like I think my relationship with the movies have changed because of when I've listened to the score or what the score has like meant to me throughout different stages of my life. Yeah, but as far as like elements that I like of film scores or like maybe film scores I gravitate towards more, I'm definitely more pulled to less like orchestral scores or fully orchestrated scores. So like John Williams is someone that I really think is like amazing, but I don't really listen to like many John Williams scores because like that's just not what I like that much. I like a couple of his, but I'm more interested in more, not minimalist, because that's not really the right descriptor, but just more simple scores or scores that are based more on like melodies in a certain instrument with like sparse instrumentation, and just more experimental stuff, rather than just like big bombastic, like epic scores. So, I mean, and maybe that has to do too with like, I would rather like listen to a simpler or more intimate score outside of the movie rather than like I'm not someone that's gonna go to Spotify and like turn on the Star Wars score like, oh yeah, gonna turn up to Empire Strikes Back today. That's just not like what I would pick if I'm looking to listen to a score.
But there are good songs from Star Wars that aren't like like I think of the song like when Padme and Anakin get married.
It's like, I don't know what song that is.
Oh, okay, never mind. It's fine.
I just don't really like or I don't really like how orchestras sound that much. So maybe that's it. I like different instrumentation than orchestras. So that's just not the scores that I grab. And it seems like you like some of that, but also a lot of your composers that I see here also kind of have less orchestral scores.
Sure.
And like change their instrumentation depending on the movie as well. Yeah.
I like ones I've noticed that have like, I'm familiar with music theory, but I don't know a lot of music words. But the ones that have like a staccato, like plunkiness, mm-hmm. that's like, you have the nice undertones, and then there's like a certain sound, whether it be a piano or a guitar or something, where it's like, and it's like higher and like goes up and down with it. Yeah, but like the staccato specifically, where there's like more hits than like flowy. Like it's kind of like bing, bing, bing,
bing, bing.
That makes
sense. Yeah. It's bing, 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 bing.
Yeah. Like, if you listen to the ones that are going to be my top scores or whatever, you'll know exactly what I mean when I say that. But
yeah, I think I know which ones you'd like, and I can see that. And I think it's like you find that a lot in mystery, maybe films, adventure films, definitely.
Sure.
Which you have some adventure films that I know you like to listen to the scores of. Yeah, I know what you're saying. That makes sense. I think those are always interesting because you can really fall into a pattern with those kind of scores, so it's cool when like people are creative with how they decide to like do that kind of sound.
And it's interesting because I've found that like when I look at scores that I liked when I was younger and compare it to scores that I like now, it's consistent between the two of like the specific type of score that it is. And so I think there's like something to say about like how movies and when you're watching them and the ones you're entranced with when you're younger, like somehow the music also affects your brain and the way that you like certain music in movies and stuff like that, because it reminds you of a certain other movie or something.
Yeah, well, I think there's two scores. I don't know if you're talking about the other one, but there's one score you're talking about that really like reminds me of another movie that came out during that same time. And it's like interesting, like there's always like phases that
Are we talking about two movies that begin with the letter N?
Yes, okay. We are. Yeah. Those two specifically, like I get them confused every time.
Yeah, they do have very similar scores. And it's funny because maybe I'll post the playlist that I sent you. But as I was going through some of these scores, I was like, oh my God, these could all be from the same movie. Like, because they all, even though they're all different movies, like, the elements are so similar that, like, maybe I'll post it on, like, Twitter or something. But yeah, you'll see,
why not?
Back to back, even how some of these, like, are exactly the same.
As far as how the music is used in the movie, I don't like a lot of underscore in movies because I think that usually is just like people overuse underscore because they're scared of silence or they're just scared of like not having any stuff, music in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely prefer when the score is used very intentionally for most of the movie, if not all of the movie. Because there was one, I was watching Moonlight. That's one where they use the score like only ever when they need it. And I would rather that when the score like has a specific intention in the film rather than like, oh, we just needed music behind here to make it sound like build tension. Because I think there are other ways to build tension sometimes than just immediately going to score. Sometimes you can, but yeah. And I think I like when also the score has a relation to the movie, like it sounds like it should be attached to the movie. We'll talk a lot about Alexander Desplat's scores. I think he and Wes Anderson always come up with really cool scores that all fit to each movie, both like instrumentation wise melodies that they come up with. And so I really also love that in movies where it's like each score, it just sounds like the film. And it's like, if we put this score with another movie, it would not work with that one. So those are like two things that I really look for is like intentionality in how the score is used and also intentionality in instruments they pick and how they write the music to fit each movie.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't really know what else I have to say about that.
What do you think about like leitmotifs and stuff? Like, do you need them? Do you hate them? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it depends on the theme, because I think in something like Batman, it works, where like the Riddler had a theme, Batman had a theme, and Catwoman had a theme, and then they're able to utilize those themes in the other songs that involve those characters, and I think that is good. Yeah, but if it's something like, obviously with Star Wars, it's hard, because Star Wars is just so popular that it's like, and that theme is so constant, and that it's just like, I don't know. I feel like in something like that, that it doesn't work as much, but I don't know.
Yeah, and I think Star Wars 2, it's like, because there's so many movies, and because the movies are so obsessed, and the shows, with the same locations, you always hear a lot of the same themes reoccurring, like the binary sunset theme whenever someone mentions like Tatooine or like anything with Luke Skywalker. So I think that they are also like kind of a crutch where it's like, oh, we mentioned this, we got to put in the binary sunset theme, which do you have to? Because like, you don't have to every time. I don't know. I think it can get to be sometimes like they get in their own head about it, where like, we need to have this theme attached to everything, where I don't think that you need to do that every time, because I don't think everyone is going to hear that every time. And there's sometimes like better decisions you could make rather than being like really rigid with like, we need a leitmotif for every character, and whenever we mention that character, we need to play that theme every time. Yeah, so I agree with you. I think it's like, if it works in the movie, it's good, but I think I'd rather them just decide what will work best for the story, because I think like a movie like we talk about the Minari score a lot. I don't think that movie would work if like the dad had a theme and the kid had a theme, like if every person in the family like had their own theme.
I feel like it works more with like hero franchises or like something where there's going to be sequels, so that it can kind of call back to a different movie.
Yeah, well, because too, I saw, remember on Twitter, there was a lot of people mad that they didn't really use the Doctor Strange theme in the sequel, because they established his theme in his movie and also in Infinity War and stuff. So like, that's an interesting conversation, I guess, because it's like, do you have to follow the theme every time, or...
But they also, didn't they use the WandaVision theme in Wanda's entrance?
They did, yeah. They did use her theme. So it's interesting that, like, he decided not to use Doctor Strange's theme. Maybe because Doctor Strange is changing. Maybe that was what they were trying to represent. I don't know.
Or maybe it's not Doctor Strange at all.
Wow. Can you imagine? It's actually the guys from the Sam Fury, the Nick Fury and the Kroll guys, right?
Yeah.
The Krolls. It's them. That would be wild. Yeah. So before we just talk about some of our favorite scores. We have some lists of our favorite composers, which we have a lot of crossover here, more than we have with our scores. So we might just like talk about ones at the same time. But what are some of your composers that you like? Because I think with composers that, like, my rule for this is when I see like that one of these composers is doing a movie, like, I just am excited to see the movie, even if I don't know what it is. I think that's usually like how I try to define it.
Well, I guess I'll say some that aren't on your list. Randy Newman. I mean, classics there. there's not really much to say beyond that about him. Other ones would be Joe Hisaishi, who composes all of Miyazaki's films. So I listen to, it's kind of hard for me because I listen to a lot of like his stuff, but though I wouldn't say those are like, I collectively like his work, which is why he's in this list and none of his scores will be in my favorite top five. But I listen to pretty much all of his work consistently. So Spirited Away, yeah. Howl's Moving Castle, Totoro, Porco Rosso, like all Ponyo. He did all of them, so.
No, definitely. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a nice pick there.
And then Vince Guaraldi, who did all the Peanuts stuff. Because it was funny, because when I was, like, looking in Spotify, like, in Spotistats to see, like, what albums and composers I've listened to the most, both the Christmas album, Charlie Brown Christmas, and the Great Pumpkin were in my top, like, in albums I listen to a lot. And so it's just kind of funny because, like, his work is so iconic, but I also think a lot of his scores are very similar to each other because they use so many similar themes. Like, the Linus and Lucy theme is, like, basically in every single one, every Peanuts special or whatever. Yeah, so he definitely is one of my, like, favorites and go-tos for the, like, basically September through January.
Yeah, that's definitely one where it's, like, that has a life beyond the movies for me, or the shorts, I guess, for me, that music. Because I listen to that definitely just a lot during Christmas. You throw on that score, and I attach that music much more to, like, just personal listening than watching the special.
What are some of the ones that you have?
So some of the ones that I have, Johnny Greenwood obviously is like one of my favorites working right now. He had two great scores last year. He's definitely one too where he uses very unique instrumentation for each score that he does, and he always matches it with the movie. Like, he'll match that score to the movie. So I think of, like, The Power of the Dog last year, which was very heavily, I think it was actually a cello. Like, it sounds like a guitar, but I'm pretty sure it was a cello that he was plucking. But, like, you have that stringed instrumentation that kind of matches, like, the Western feel. But then you have Spencer, which is, like, the mix of, like, free jazz and, like, I don't, it was, what was the other? I haven't listened to that score in a bit, but like that's just like a completely different sound than Power of the Dog. So that's like I think last year was a really good showcase of his skills because he's really good at doing that and like looking at what each movie needs. John Bryan is like just someone who I really like in general, like even just like in what he decides to produce, the music he does, like with the Mac Miller albums. I think he did the last two is what he did, and like he's just like a really cool composer and musician, so I really like his scores because they're also always very unique in like what he decides to do for them. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross are like people in the last like 10 years that have gotten really popular, and obviously everyone loves the Social Network score. Even like though the Soul score they did was really good, the Mank score, bringing back Mank, my favorite movie. No, I love Mank. I think I haven't heard about anyone talk about Mank in a while, so I gotta bring it back. Michael Abels, we talk about sometimes. He did Get Out and Us, but also Bad Education.
That's a great score.
Is he doing the score for Nope? I hope so.
I don't know. I never looked. Let's see. Look now.
That he bet, because I think Get Out and Us are like very, they're more typical horror scores, but he does a good job of like making them stand out, which I think is like what the movies themselves stand out from horror as well. So
yeah, this says there's a an article from Film Music Reporter which says Michael Abels to reteam with Jordan Peele on Nope.
Very cool. And then I also put here Wendy Carlos, who she did the Clockwork Orange, because that's not really an original score, but they used the Beethoven music, but she made it the synthesized versions. And also I think she did the stuff for The Shining and also the original Tron score. And she was really cool because she was very huge in the trans community. She was, openly trans when she was making these scores, and that like just really cool, pushing boundaries. And her music is really cool and very fun to listen to. And I think like Clockwork Orange would not be the same if they didn't use that music.
Hmm.
Cool. What are some of our crossovers here? Cause we do like a lot of
similar
scores too.
Let's see. Of course, Emil Mosseri, 2-time award, secondhand film award winner.
Ah, yes. He didn't do any last year, yeah, so this year maybe we'll get another one.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he did kind of just some other, like, personal work last year and not any, like,
yeah,
film scores.
Good for him.
So he couldn't be a 3-time award winner, but...
when you win 2 secondhand film awards, you have to wonder, where do I go from here?
Yeah.
And he was just redefining his career, figuring out where to go next.
Yeah, I love all of his scores, so I started listening to him after the last Black Man in San Francisco score, which is incredible, and then he did the Minari score in Kajillionaire, which is also great. And I think he's someone too that has a very like individualistic style, like you can tell that it's his score in all 3 of them, but they're all so different at the same time.
Yeah, because, like, well, Last Black Man in San Francisco takes a lot from, like, kind of more piano jazz styles, if I remember correctly. Then Minari is, like, guitar, right? And, like, strings, and they use the vocals. And then Kajillionaire is more electronic. But they're all, like, very, like, ambient and, like, ethereal. The reason he's one of my favorites right now is, like, for that reason. Because, like, he does have very individual... He, like... specifies films scores depending on the film, but you can always tell like it's him in all 3 of his scores, the main ones that he's done. And he's doing the Jonah Hill movie, I'm pretty sure. Didn't they remember they announced that?
Yes, I feel like I remember seeing that and sending that to you. I forgot about it until just now though.
Yeah, I just remembered because I was like, what is he doing next? And I remember seeing that Instagram post. So yeah,
let's see, what other ones do we have that crossover?
Bum bum ba da 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 da. That's the Succession score of theme. Nicholas Britell, he's great. And obviously Succession is a TV show, but that's a great score. All 3 seasons have like really awesome music. But then he's also done Moonlight. I think actually the Beale Street score is maybe even better than Moonlight. I think that's like a really good score.
I think I agree with you.
Yeah, like, because Moonlight is good, but again, the score is very sparse. And so, like, you have a few good themes, but I think Beale Street's, like, just makes that movie so much better, in my opinion. Because I think it's a pretty good movie, but the score, like, elevates it so highly. And then he also did the Don't Look Up score last year, which was okay.
Oh, it was fine. It was very, like, jazzy.
Yeah, I think it actually, in the movie, they kind of bury it, which is disappointing because I like it by itself, but then I was watching when I rewatched it, I like was trying to listen for the score and they kind of bury the score, so that's unfortunate because he does have like he's an interesting combination of very classically trained, but he also incorporates a lot of like either hip-hop elements or jazz elements. Like he always incorporates more modern sounds into the classical, which is in Succession is like perfectly demonstrated in the opening theme. What a great theme. That is a great opening theme.
I love it. Yeah.
And he wrote L to the OG, your favorite song.
L to the OG.
Dude be the OG.
And we play.
And he playing like a pro. Wow.
When I say
you're welcome, everyone.
You say O G.
You say G.
L to the
O G.
Oh gosh.
Classic Kendall. Classic Kendall Roy.
And then of course we both have Alexander Desplat.
Alexander Desplat, the man himself. Yeah, he's really cool.
Yeah.
And he uses a lot of melody in his scores. I think in the French Dispatch score, you have like the obituary cue, which is like you just have all those melodies like coinciding and getting together. Like he just really employs melody over harmony, which I don't think a lot of scores really rely on the harmonic elements, right? Because it's just like, oh, we'll just underscore and like this chord progression will provide the emotion that we need. But he really like emphasizes melody sometimes where it's like it's the only thing really, like it's all built on melody, which is really cool.
Yeah, I love like Grand Budapest is one that I listen to a lot. Little Women, of course.
Yeah, Little Women's great. Grand Budapest, I love the Mr. Mustafa, I think.
Great song, yeah.
I think if anyone like is vacuuming ever, that is a score to put on.
That's a vacuuming score?
That's, well, because you feel like you're like a hotel, you're like working at a hotel.
Sure,
you're like cleaning up.
Yeah, we'll get to talk about him a little more this summer when we do the Wes Anderson series. But yeah, he's great. He's like one of the, he was the one that almost made the cut last year in my top five in Spotify.
Right there. So close, Alexander. Maybe next year. Maybe this year.
Maybe with the actual stats, maybe he passed Olivia Rodrigo, but like, sorry.
Alexander Desplat and Olivia Rodrigo battling it out for the top five spot. Wow. That's so funny. And then we also, lastly, have Michael Giacchino, I don't know. It's one of those two. He's really cool, too. I think we've talked a little bit about how recently his scores have I haven't liked most of his scores in the last like 5 years, I guess.
Yeah, I thought the Spider-Man one, No Way Home, was pretty good. Like, it definitely stood out to me compared to some of his other like previous scores. But yeah. Batman was like unreal.
What a return to form.
That's one of the ones that I pre-ordered, and I cannot wait to like get it and play it on vinyl.
That was like sitting in the theater listening to that. I was like, he's back, my man. Cause like used to get excited for. But then like I saw Rogue One and I saw Jurassic World and I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, I think it's hard when a composer like that really gets sucked into, not that they can't be creative in like a major studio franchise, but like I think it's harder to be, especially in one that has established themes already. So, like, Jurassic, you're having to build off of stuff that John Williams did in the original Jurassic. Or in Star Wars, like, again, you're building off of John Williams. So, it's just hard because you have to retain a lot of the, like, original sounds of the franchise, but try to make it your own, and it gets a little muddy there.
Yeah, and he was definitely, there were some years where he was doing, like, three scores multiple years in a row, and, like, that's something where it's like, how can you make three film scores a year and like have each one be like super unique and like stand out on its own?
Sure.
So I hope that Batman maybe signals like maybe one score a year more, like, because I think he is also very good at leitmotifs and themes. I mean, what is it? Married Life is what the cue is called from Up. That one is like iconic. And then you bring
that
back
whole
that
score
scene
is so
throughout
good.
The movie. Yeah, that's what Up he's good score. At. And I think Batman like showed that because, again, you had all those themes in Batman that just like flowed together perfectly.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, what a guy. I'll be talking about one of his scores in a second after we come back from this ad break where we're just going to run through our top five film scores.
Should like interlude with a score, like we're back, and then we do like a I'm trying to think of a score off the top of my head. I keep thinking of that Star Wars one where it's like dun, 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 dun. So just imagine that that was playing when I said, and we're back.
Okay, so obviously we have more than five scores we like. So we have a couple honorable mentions that I'll just run through like really fast. So Edward Scissorhands almost made the cut. I think this is Danny Elfman's best score. I love his early work. I think more than now he's not doing as good, but I love that score. Lord of the Rings obviously is great. The Dark Knight, just that for that whole trilogy, I think is Hans Zimmer's probably his best work. La La Land, I love the La La Land score. I didn't really consider it for this because a lot of the music and stuff is based off the songs. So I think that's hard to like, is that a fully original score? Like, even though maybe he wrote it, I don't know. It's just, there are different things. Grand Budapest, we already talked about. I like that one. The Incredibles, Michael, there he is again. That is a great score, The Incredibles. And then Eighth Grade, Anna Meredith did this score. I don't think she's done anything, a movie score since this, but this is a really unique electronic score that does a great job of relating the themes of the movie. So I think people don't really think about that score that much, but I would recommend listening to the Eighth Grade score because it's very good. All right, so these are my top five. A lot of these are more just like more nostalgic, because I think there's a lot of that come out in the last 5 years that might make this list over time, but I just have a hard time like taking out some of these for a movie that came out 2 years ago, if that makes sense. So I wanted to make sure these were like certified classics.
Sure. As mine includes like almost movies that like all came out in the past 2 years.
But you have some that you liked a lot when you were younger too. Yeah. And I have some too that have come out more recently. So starting at the bottom, number five is E.T. I actually am not a huge fan of E.T. I think it's it's an okay movie.
I think it's pretty mid too.
Yeah. But I did love this movie when I was a kid. I watched this way more than Star Wars. Which is maybe why I like this score more than Star Wars. And I think this score, without this score, I think E.T. would not even be thought of today. I think it wouldn't have even worked, because I don't think this movie works without this score.
Yeah, great point.
And, you know, all I'm going to say is that part when they're doing the bike chase and it goes, dun, 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 that part is pretty great. It's a pretty great part. That's all I'm going to say. And I do think this is maybe like, I know a lot of people like this score, but I don't know if people say it's John Williams' best, but I think it's like top five.
I know which one I would say is John Williams' best.
I'm sure we'll hear about it in a second.
We will.
So my number four is Inside Out. I think like the up score is good, really good. It's not just good, but I like this one a little bit more. I think the elements that he uses in this one is this really unique like mix of piano, electronics, and even like he uses some guitar at some points to like get the momentum up. There's a lot of different instrumentation going on here, but he also has the themes for joy and sadness, I think most prominently. And they just all mix together, and then you got that big ending where everyone just cries.
I love that score.
Great score, great movie. Wow.
Yeah, wow. Both. Amen. Amen to both.
Amen, brother. This is a great score. And I don't, like, a lot of people just talk about Up, but I think this one gets a little overlooked more because it doesn't have, like, the married life equivalent, you know? Yeah. So it's a little bit less talked about. Number three is Fantastic Mr. Fox. This is
so fun.
A classic. This is a TikTok classic now. So many, this is like so much life to this score. And one reason I have the score even so high is because there are so many different themes in this, but I know each one. Like when it plays in the movie, like you know the exact melody. And it's like, that's pretty impressive to have multiple just like cues in the score. And I just know them by heart because they're all so nice and catchy, and they really, I think, match like the fall autumn vibe of the film.
Yeah, totally agree.
Again, like completely different from Grand Budapest, which is another Wes Anderson, Alexandre Desplat film. But like just completely different, but they both match the movie perfectly. Number two is Lady Bird. I don't think many people talk about this score. This is John Bryan. And this is one where I don't really think there are many themes at all. The only big obvious theme is when it has like the one cue that plays when she starts high school and then the cue that plays when she starts college, which are kind of like bookends kind of thing, because it's like at the end and at the beginning. But a lot of it is just like 1 minute cues. It's a pretty short score. It's like 30 minutes maybe overall, and they're just really short, condensed, mostly like drum machines and I think woodwinds, definitely. I'm not sure exactly what woodwinds, but it's like very interesting instrumentation in that way, where it's like you have the drum machines and the woodwinds, and it feels just like the movie. I don't know how to say, like the nostalgic kind of rose tinted glasses, but also with the more raw element that the movie brings. I don't know, this is like just one of my favorite scores to put on when I just need a relaxing atmosphere and I just need a vibe out, and this score always provides me with like just a really relaxing feeling. And I, this point, I've listened to the score so much that when I watch the movie, I'm like, yes, this is my favorite cue. Yes, it's here. But it's just literally like a drum, like in a hi-hat, just like playing. I don't know. It's funny because they're not like huge, like exciting cues, but they are really intimate and beautiful. And then number one, I think most people would have been able to guess if they listened to the podcast, is the Phantom Thread score. This is like, yeah, this is just like one of the best scores of all time, in my opinion. This does have a lot of themes, but it also uses new things throughout, where you're not just getting the leitmotifs cue after cue throughout the score. And it's mixed with existing classical music too, which helps, I think, spice it up. Yeah, this, the House of Woodcock cue is great. And I think the biggest flex, though, is the movie technically, like the last scene before the title card is the House of Woodcock's cue. But then they do a new cue on the end title screen. And in my opinion, that's for The Hungry Boy, I think is what it's called. And I think that's even better. Like, that's like, I think, the best cue in the movie. And they save that for the very end. They never play that theme ever in the movie. But they know it's, he knows it's so good that he can play this theme that you've never heard. And it's gonna, it's perfect. It's, I don't know. That stuff like that is what really like gets me. And I think that cue is really good for The Hungry Boy. I wish that one was more popular, because there's like no sheet music or like even like fan transcribed sheet music for that one. But I love that one. That one's really good. Yeah, that's my five.
Wow. Incredible. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, so I'll go through a couple honorable mentions here. I've kind of mentioned a couple like that I've already like Last Black Man in San Francisco and Bad Education, stuff like that. A couple other ones I'll say. Pride and Prejudice, that score by Jean-Yves Thibaudet. It's great. The theme when it starts playing and Darcy is walking across the field and the music is playing. I live that scene in my brain like multiple times a day. I think about that. And then one that I've always kind of loved is the Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe score by Harry Gregson Williams, specifically the like Narnia theme. Incredible. Dun, dun,
dun, dun. I'm trying to think. Yeah, that one's good. And the vocals are really cool.
Yeah, that's a great. And when we rewatched that one for an episode recently, I was like struck by it in the battle. Specifically when the music is playing, and I was like, wow, this is really good.
So, so epic.
Yeah. And so I love that one. And I love when like, with movies like this that I liked as a kid, I like being able to like them now. Like another one is How to Train Your Dragon, and that like main theme.
Talk about a TikTok trend. Yeah, wow. There's another big one.
Sorcerer's Stone. Like just kind of stuff that you watch as a kid that sort of imprint themselves in your brain. Another one is Goodbye Lenin, the Jan Tiersen score. Great. And then one that I really liked when it first came out and that I still listen to is The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
Oh, that, wow, that movie, I forget about that movie.
We should like, do and an episode bring it on up, that one.
And I'm like, wow.
I liked that movie when it came out, but I do really like the score still.
Yeah, interesting.
Anyway, all right, I'll say my five here. So I was really torn on my number five. I had my top four locked for a while, and then I was like, oh, this number five, I just don't know what to do. The one that I cut out is the Little Women score that Desplotted for the 2019 Little Women. Love it. It's so good. I'd listen to it often. But something's got to be cut, right?
Something's got to go.
So my number five, hopefully these will like surprise some people. That's my goal, is to like bring some
I'll do a surprise guest a reaction. Every time
you thank you. So my number five is the Christopher Robin score by Jeff Zanelli and John Brion, who you mentioned and who one of your scores is by, right?
Wow. Yes, so, it is. Lady Bird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the score. It's just so sweet. It's an, it's one of the ones that's like, it does the... And I love that. It's so happy. I'm a big fan of the Christopher Robin movie, even though like a lot of people find it very boring. It's fine. I half respect your opinion. But this movie, I like it. And the score is very nice. I've been listening to it like pretty consistently since it came out, and it's just a very nice like background music like to put on.
That's one of those scores where it's like, I feel like if I looked at Spotify, like literally everyone, you might be the only person that like one day listened to the Christopher Robin score, because like who's listening? I'm just like, that's one of those scores, like is there really a lot of people still listening
well,
to that?
Well, and
that's,
you know what's really funny is if you look on Spotify, let me bring it up. Like, on the computer now, they show you the amount of plays for, like, songs on Spotify and an album. So, like, the main theme has almost 3 million plays on it. But then everything else is, like, 100,000 or less. And I'm like, wow, I feel, like, cool now.
Yeah, you're so indie.
I don't
know
if it's like cool or if it's like makes me less cool. I'm not really sure.
Who's to say?
My number four is Home Alone, the John Williams score.
Home Alone.
Oh, it's so
I love
good.
Home. I love this is a great. Oh my gosh. This is, I think, really good score.
I think this is his best score, in my opinion. But that's
I would have probably
opinion.
Replaced this with E.T. if you were, I knew you were taking it. So I was like, I'll just do his other one. But like, this one is. Really good. Really
and
good.
Like, I think I relate that to Christmas. So when I'm thinking about Christmas, I'm thinking of it being like,
somewhere in my heart.
And I just like, when I watch this every year, it's like basically one of my favorite all time Christmas
it's the
movies.
Best, one of the best Christmas movies
and
ever.
And I convinced my family to watch it this year on Christmas Eve. I was like, this is the movie. And when he is, it like plays the score and then his mom comes and he turns around and it swells. I'm like, it's so good. Like this movie, again, like you said, with E.T., it just, I mean, it would be a good movie, but it wouldn't be the same as it was without the score behind it.
So true.
And I love Christmas, so I like the little Christmas additions to it. my third pick here is one that's a little out of left field, and it is the Night at the Museum score by Alan Silvestri.
This is what we were talking about before with this score and the National
Treasure
score.
Yeah, they're very similar. They have a lot of similar like elements to them. Yeah, this one it's funny because this is a movie that I watched a lot as a kid, and for some reason the score in this has just stuck with me. All the themes in the museum, and there's a couple different like I think character themes a little bit in this one. Like Teddy Roosevelt's character has like a specific theme, and I just, when I listen to the score, and this is something I can't do very often because my brain doesn't remember like visuals. I don't remember what it's called, but like when I imagine something, I can't conjure a picture in my brain. And so for me, remembering movies is a little difficult, like to visualize in my brain. But for some reason, when I listen to this score specifically, I can visualize the scenes in my brain. And so I'm like, wow, that's really cool, because that's something I can't, like, do very often. And so I just, wow, this movie and this score is so good. I actually was listening to it today in my car when I was driving to a soccer game. And I was like, yeah, I'm vibing tonight at the museum right now. And no one knows who's driving past me. My second one is the Minari score by Emil Mosseri.
What?
I listen to this all the time. I took
this is a classic.
A plane flight recently, and it was one of the few albums that I like downloaded. And basically the whole entire flight, like both flights, I just listened to the score on repeat while I read. It's just so, like you said, ethereal, but it like just transports you to a different place in your brain. And it's so nice and peaceful and always makes me feel like, because you know how there's some scores that you listen to and they're maybe even similar to this where it's like very swooping and there's the voices, the vocal stuff. And it makes you sad, and you listen to it when you're sad, and you want to like wallow.
But this
in
one,
your
it's like both. Like you can be happy. Yeah,
it's like a melancholy,
some weird combination,
or like
bittersweet,
melancholy. it's melancholy. But it's almost like it's a very like. I mean, it matches the tone of the movie for sure.
Definitely.
But I like the way that it makes me feel, and that's why I like it. And then my number one is the Luca score. By Dan Brommer.
Actually, no one's surprised about that, so that was...
No, definitely not. this score is so good, and I know it, like, backwards and forwards, so if you were to, like, play a song of it, I could, like, do literally the whole song and then just keep going. Wow. And then it was really cool after I was listening to it for a while when I went back and watched the movie and, like, knew the score, and so I was pairing the score that I knew with the movie, which was an interesting way to, like, because I don't know that there's a score that I know now as well as I know the Luca score because of how much I listened to it last year. So it was cool to, like, do that and actually know, like, literally every single note of the score and, like, all the cues and transitions and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. It's so weird because it's like you develop a relationship with a certain aspect of the movie and then you would reattach it to it when you watch it. And it's like you're bringing all those emotions or, like, feelings with you. And it's it's a completely different way of watching it. That's film scores. It's all that needs to be said ever about them.
Yeah, no more comments.
No more comments until the Secondhand Film Awards, when we will be giving out our favorite film score of this year. It's gonna be hard to beat Batman. That's definitely the easy front runner right now.
I think it's also the only one in our document right now.
I'm not going to put in the score for the bad guys. I mean, I don't even know what that, like, what, I don't think
the
there's all that,
City
any other scores.
Score.
With that, though, I think our question of the week should be, what is your favorite film score? Is it one of the ones we talked about? Is it the score for the bad guys? I don't know. I mean, there's got to be one person that, like, watched that movie. Like,
is it Tron Legacy by Daft Punk from 2010?
I'm sure one person will say that.
That was a great score.
Yeah. I feel like that's the only reason, like, that's the only thing that people are glad exists about that movie. Because, like, no one thinks about that movie for anything but the Daft Punk score.
I liked that movie when it came out.
Well, but, like, if I never hear see people talk about it at all unless they're talking about the score, though. That's, like, I don't know. Maybe we need to reevaluate it. Maybe we should do a Tron episode.
Yeah, do Tron, the original Tron.
We talked about the old Tron score today. I talked about it for a second.
Yeah, and then do Tron Legacy. Sure.
Sure. Sure thing. I haven't seen the old one, so I haven't seen the new one in a long time.
So I haven't seen it since probably like close to 2010.
Yeah, like out. I might have seen it when it came out, and then I probably didn't watch it again. That's besides the point, though. Let us know what your favorite score is on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just reach out, search secondhand film critics wherever those places are, and you'll find us. You can also email us at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com. You can answer the question on the Spotify feature. So many ways to reach out. And while you're just on your phone moving around to our different places, just go over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can review. And it's just easy, you know? It just takes a couple clicks.
Mm-hmm.
Couple clicks of the buttons.
Sure does.
Oh, man. What is our next episode? Is it Is it another film score episode? Are we talking about real film scores now?
The scoring that we give films?
Yes. That'd be a boring episode.
Yeah, so next week's episode will be kind of sort of a sequel episode to previous episodes that we've done, but kind of like a new episode. It's going to be, is Netflix dead?
Yeah, we're just going to be talking about the state of streaming. It's crazy world out there. Lots of sap has happened.
We've done a couple Netflix and streaming episodes in the past. We did a couple years ago, or maybe, no, 2019, so 3 years ago.
Yeah.
We did an episode on our Netflix originals, Killing Netflix or something. And like, look at it now. We called it. 3 years ago.
We really did. We're pretty cool, I
so
think.
So we'll be kind of talking about that. And we've done other streaming episodes through the years.
Yeah, Disney Plus, we did a couple episodes on.
Yeah.
We've talked about coronavirus episodes, we definitely talked about streaming a lot.
Yeah, so it'll be exciting to kind of touch on what's going on with streaming now and Netflix and all the news. And it's going to be fun. So make sure you tune in.
Yeah, we're going to be ranting. I assume we'll be
probably.
Yeah, that
those
I'm
dang
for that
Netflix people. I can't believe
the film industry
ruining film.
Well, kind of, but also not. It's complicated. We'll get into that next week. yeah. So tune in next Tuesday at 10 a.m. to check out that episode. Anything else until then?
I got nothing.
Well, until next time. I'm L to the
OMG!
And we're
your
secondhand film critics.